And the music drifting into your home at the moment is the music of Bangladesh. Hagar Cohen joins us. Hagar, you're taking us a long way away this evening.
Yes. Hello, John. We're going to Bangladesh tonight.
Pretty tragic floods in Bangladesh over the last couple of weeks.
Very tragic. I'm not sure if you've seen the photos online.
No, but I did have a look at a map the other day. The BBC published a map of the rivers that flow into Bangladesh, and really there looked to be a lot more water than land.
Lots more water. But, John, monsoons in Southeast Asia aren't very much of a rarity. They happen every year.
But this one's a big one.
That's right. This one is a very, very big one. And we're hearing reports about some saying three-quarters of the country literally went underwater. That's massive.
Yeah, astounding. Mm. So who are we talking to?
We're talking to Stav Zitalis. She's from Cairns, Australia. Now, she's in Dhaka, or right near Dhaka, which is the capital of Bangladesh. And she's telling me here about the latest situation with the floods.
The flood situation now is that the flood water is receding. If heavy rainfalls do not occur, then the water should recede. However, in various places, what you'll find is that there's a waterlogged situation because the water couldn't be drained. The other situation is that because the flood has hit some of the sort of geographically most vulnerable places, as the flood waters come and now as it's going away, the riverbank erosion has been aggravated in some parts. So what you're finding is that people have lost their homes completely and agricultural land to the river. I mean, this is a common occurrence that happens in parts of Bangladesh every year, but this year with the floods, it's a lot worse.
Can you tell me, is it really three-quarters of the country still underwater?
The information that we're getting, you know, as you can imagine, is variable. I mean, Bangladesh has a lot of water. I mean, water is good for Bangladesh. But what happens, you know, and you have floods every year, and these floods are welcome because, you know, it's very good for the harvest and agricultural produce, which is what most people in Bangladesh rely on. But what happened this year was that there was excessive water, and not throughout the country. So I don't know the source of your information, but what happened is with about 17% of Bangladesh went underwater. And what you have to bear in mind is that parts of Bangladesh are already underwater. I think it's about 30%, but don't quote me on that.
And the water is starting to recede already, but not as fast as you've expected?
Well, it in some places better than expected, in some places worse. And one of the worst problems is the water log. Like even in around Dhaka, there are situations where the water's, you know, water's not moving, and that's creating, as you can imagine, a huge health risk and inconvenience for people.
So how does that affect our normal city life? I mean, can people go about their normal lives, go to work? Do they still have homes?
Well, it varies from year to year. I mean, this year some of the outlying parts of Bangladesh have been affected. I mean, some people that I know, for example, are kind of living in rooms or homes that are flood affected, and people here are incredibly resilient. I mean, I know when there's, you know, a hailstorm or something in Sydney, everyone's evacuated and gets taken to hotels. The insurance company pays for. But here, people are resilient. If there's water, if there's a certain number of water, what they do is they raise everything. They have this thing called a machang, which is a bamboo platform, and they raise everything onto this platform. And if the water's really bad, then they sort of move up to the roof. So people are resilient, and they do stay in their homes because alternatives are so few. I mean, for the people that are wealthier, then they can move elsewhere, and they can, you know, perhaps they have relatives they can stay with, or they have resources to go elsewhere. For the middle group, you know, they have other options. But it's really for the bottom, you know, the bottom poor part of the population that really suffered during this time.
So for the poor people, do they even have a shelter or food?
For some of the poor, you know, that have savings and have some assets, they can get by. But when you're talking about sort of, say, the bottom 10 to 20% of the populations, they're the ones that really suffer because they're vulnerable. They don't have a lot of assets or savings, or even secure homes to begin with. And so during this time, it's that group of people that are really doing it tough. And that's the biggest threat for that group of people that don't have the resources to cope or that have some resources, but they've been exceeded because of the excessive water. And what happens, unfortunately, in Bangladesh is that the extreme poor and marginalised people, have no choice but to live in the most vulnerable and flood-prone areas of the country. You know, these areas you may have heard of are called the Chores, which are essentially river islands, and the Howe, which are these low-lying flash flood areas. And people are forced, because they have so limited resources, to live in these areas.
And so is that a significant part of the Bangladeshi population?
Yeah, it is a sizable part of the population. The latest figures that are available say that 40% of the population live below a poverty line. Okay, it's a bit of a crude measure based on an income. And then within that 40% of the population, about 20%, you know, live in extremely more vulnerable conditions. So 20% of 145 million is a sizable part of the population.
And so what's happening with these people?
I mean, there has been progress in Bangladesh. If you have a look at Bangladesh from independence, you know, from the early 70s, and you look at the situation now, you know, it has improved for a lot of people. I mean, people that know Bangladesh a lot better than me say that the extreme forms of poverty aren't there. But for this bottom category of the population, particularly for those that are what is termed, you know, economically inactive, so older women that don't have people to look after them, disabled people, these people have very few options, and the government here does not provide the sort of social services that you expect, that you get in developed countries. So for these people, life is really tough.
So those services, who are they provided by international aid agencies?
Yeah, there's international aid agencies, but increasingly less in Bangladesh. There's also some very, very large, strong local organisations. And what you find in Bangladesh is, over the last few decades, these local organisations, like one that you may know of is BRAC, and also Proshika and a few others, RDRS in the north, they have received a lot of donor money, and they've built up their own resources. Someone like BRAC is a huge organisation. It has outreach in all the districts, and what it does is it provides, it raises a lot of its own revenue. And so 2/3 of the money, then puts into sort of programs like for this ultra-poor group that we were talking about earlier, the bottom 20% of the population.
So, Steph, can you tell me about your work? Were you actually in Bangladesh when the monsoon started?
I was actually out of the country. I arrived about 2 weeks ago when the water was starting to rise.
So do you actually work with locals there?
Yeah, I mean, some of our staff have been, their homes have been affected, and certainly the groups that we're working with, particularly in the Chor and Howe area and some urban slums, have been affected. What Care Bangladesh has done in the recent years is become much more focused on this extreme poor group of people, which has largely been neglected. Some of these areas are really difficult to get to. I mean, you might travel for a day and see 3 or 4 villages because they are quite remote. You have to travel. They don't have roads, so you have to travel either by motorbike during the dry season and by boat during the wet season. And so because it's difficult logistically to get there, a lot of the aid and support activity doesn't get to these areas. So CARE's made a conscious effort to reach this group of people. And what we found in this flood is that this group of people have been really badly affected. And through our partner organisations, we've been able to reach them. And CARE Bangladesh has been working more and more with local organisations.
So how hard is it for you to travel to these places, but also to take care of people who are so affected by this?
What we have is regional offices, and then we have hub offices, and then we have our partner organisations. And these partners, they're located in the field and they know the communities. So I don't physically go and travel to these areas. I mean, I'll go and have a look, but we have people on the ground in these areas. And fortunately, most of the time, telecommunications is quite good. The mobile phone network in Bangladesh has revolutionised communication. So you have mobile phone access, and the internet access, works most of the time. And so that's how we're communicating a lot of the time. But we do have most of our staff located in the regions. For example, CARE Bangladesh has 850 staff. 200 of those are in headquarters, and 650 of those staff are located out in the field.
Are you in Dhaka at the moment?
Yes, I'm just outside of Dhaka.
And what's the situation there at the moment?
The situation is that, where I'm living, fortunately, we haven't been affected by floods. In some other areas, there is waterlogging, particularly in the slums. I mean, for the working population and the poorer populations of Dhaka, they live in slums, and the The infrastructure is really weak. I mean, some of these are built very quickly. Water and sanitation facilities are quite limited. And so when you have excessive flooding, these are some of the areas that actually do get waterlogged because you don't have a natural flow of water, and so you get huge health problems. I mean, we're hearing reports of increasing numbers of children and also adults suffering from diarrhoea and other waterborne diseases.
Now, Stav, this isn't the first time that Bangladesh or even Southeast Asia is experiencing such a disastrous monsoon season. Are you or any of the other aid agencies better prepared this time around to deal with this?
Bangladesh has come a long way with disaster preparedness. I mean, there's still a lot of work to be done. But when you look at, say, the floods that happened 10 years ago and the floods that are now, when you look at, say, the deaths, they have been reduced. I mean, part of it is because this was, it wasn't a flash flood. It didn't come quickly. It came slowly. But also because people are being prepared. For example, CARE and other organisations have been building flood shelters. And so this is a place where people can go and stay during the floods. In some of these very vulnerable areas, the ones that I mentioned earlier, the Chore, the River Islands, and these Har areas, what CARE has been doing through this program, say for the last 3 years, is that they're trying to build embankments, so actually extending the land in the higher part of the village, so when the floods come, people aren't forced to leave. What you find in these parts of the country is that typically what happens is the men migrate and the women and children are left behind. What we're trying to do through one of our programs, Shuhada, is actually increase the amount of land that's in the higher part of the building, higher part of the village, so people can stay. And we're also providing agricultural support and doing a range of other things. So when the floods come, people can stay there.
So what are the flow-on long-term consequences to this?
Well, what the long-term consequences, it varies. I mean, for a large part of the country, it'll be business as usual. But for those parts of the country that have really been affected, like in the northeast, particularly some of the, those worst districts like Gaibandha and Seraj Ganj, it will take time for them to get back to normal. I think the easiest way to understand it is that there's three groups of people. There's those that are sort of better off, okay, and they've got access and they've got resources and they can move. But in these really more remote areas, more vulnerable and flood-prone regions, there's a part of the country where the floods hit, which is called the Chore area, and we're coming up to a really critical time. Even in normal years, they really suffer now. It's a pre-harvest season. So what happens is from September through to November, this group of people who are usually landless, so they're relying on day labour, that means going to work for someone else for a daily wage, there's going to be very little work available for them. What's happened through the floods is that large parts of land, up to 1 million hectares, has been destroyed. Livestock's been killed. So those people that are employing these day labourers, their resources, they don't have the resources to employ them. So what you're finding is these people are really going to struggle to get work. And in normal years, where you don't have this excessive flooding like we had this year, these people revert to really desperate measures. I mean, they cut back on the number of meals they have per day. They sell whatever assets they have for fairly low rates. Another coping mechanism is that they use whatever savings they have. They take out loans from money lenders. I mean, microfinance programs won't lend to these people, these really extremely poor people. So what they do is they borrow money at very high interest rates just to cope with the day-to-day eating. Another thing they do is they forward sell their labour. So, you can make a dollar a day during the harvest season, or a little bit more, depending on the area. So we're talking about, between 50 and 70, 80 taka, depending a day, which is, there's about 55 taka to the Australian dollar. But what you find is during these really desperate times, they'll forward sell their labour for, you hear, as low as 15 taka a day. So that's like 25 cents a day. So these people are really getting into a desperate situation. These floods are absolutely devastating. And if we don't get support to them quickly, then it's going to make their ability to bounce back, even more difficult.
Stav Zitalis, talking with Hagar Cohen. You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio around Australia.